Podcasting from London, Ontario, Canada, this is The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You. An interview show where creative people talk about what inspires them to pursue their dreams and do what they love. And now, your host, Karis Thomas.
And welcome again. Here we are back with The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You. You can find us on the web at thelovers.com. You can also find us on Facebook. We are The First Hit if you search for Lovers, The Dreamers, and You. And you can also follow us on Twitter, please. We are at Lovers, Dreamers, and the letter U. Lovers, Dreamers, You on Twitter. Please join us in all of those wonderful internet places. We're having lots of fun experimenting and blogging and all of that great stuff. So I'm Karis Thomas. Should have started with that, eh? your host for today. And with me, I have a whole gaggle of folks. Today I have my assistant guest host, Matt Stewart.
Yo.
And my other assistant guest host, Carrie Hishon.
Hello.
Back from a sojourn. Haven't seen her in a while.
I know.
Of course, behind the producer mic is the lovely Luke.
Hello.
And then, of course, in the guest chair is the wonderful Erin Hunt.
Hello.
There she is, ladies and gentlemen. And we're here to talk to Erin today because she is a wonderful visual artist. And we haven't had anyone who does that sort of creative endeavor on the show yet, and that's what we're all about here at The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You, is what inspires people to be creative. So I'm going to start off here, Erin, by asking you, how did you get into doing what you do creatively? So maybe describe for our listeners, which I know is hard with visual arts, but if you could describe sort of what your favorite thing is to do and then sort of describe your path as to how you got to that.
Okay, my favorite thing is painting. I started drawing, I guess, when I was little. I've always been sort of into creative things, and I got into painting in high school and really sort of found my niche there.
Okay, cool. So for people who do paint and who know what that means and what those mediums are, if you want to, can you expand on that? Is there a favorite sort of style or...
Or
medium, it's called, right, Matt?
Medium or technique, yes. Yeah.
Okay, that you really like to delve into?
My main style, I guess, I like to do abstract and landscape, mostly in acrylics or oils.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Excellent. So you have, I'm told, a showing or a couple of showings coming up.
I do.
Okay, can you tell us about those?
I might have one. My art is being displayed at the Aeolian Hall at the Autumn Artist Exhibit from October 17th to November 25th, and I have a couple pieces going up in Starbucks for November.
Very nice.
Yeah, so if you go and see a show at the Aeolian, her stuff is on the main stage.
Nice.
Oh, where the major concerts are.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Hers is on very either side cool. of the stage. They have an entire exhibit's worth of artists.
Very nice.
That's exciting. Erin, I was wondering, what sort of training or background do you have that got you to where you are right now?
I did my BA in fine art at Western. I took painting and drawing classes.
So what was that like? I have a BFA in dance, but
yeah.
You know, what's it like being, because Matt, you're a visual artist, and Erin, you've done that. Like, what's it like to take that kind of a fine arts course?
At first, I really didn't like it. Because I thought it was too structured and whatnot, but they really get you to sort of think about what you're going to be creating and how it comes across to other people and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really cool.
What about you, Matt?
They teach you technically.
Yeah, I was the same. In first year, it was really structured, and I absolutely hated it because it was like stepping back.
Yeah.
But they do that for a reason, to be able to develop you right from the get-go.
Right.
And then from there on, from years 2 to 4, it was very independent, and you got to lead your professors in what you were doing.
And where did you go, Matt?
I did 3 years at Fanshawe. I got my advanced diploma there, and then I moved out to Lethbridge, Alberta, and got my BFA in studio art there.
So it sounds like, correct me if I'm wrong, that it's very similar to BFA in dance, kind of BMUS and the BFA in acting, in that, like, in high school, if you get into these arts, your teachers in grade 9 and grade 10, they teach you the structure, they teach you the techniques, and then they get you going. And then in grade 11 and 12, they're like, go, express, be creative. And then, bam, first year university, they make you start all over again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It literally is starting back at, this pencil does this.
Really?
This pencil does this. And, yeah, I almost failed out of first year.
Well, and they do that in theater school, too. There's, like, this is how to breathe. And I know a lot of people who go to do their first year in acting, they're like, I know how to breathe, and they're like really rebellious.
But it's worth it. Like, I, as much as I felt like I was falling back, and you probably felt the same way, once you got into the further years, they actually did teach you more than you thought you knew at the time.
Yeah, I actually took a first year art course, and then I decided I didn't like it because it was so structured and whatever, so I decided not to do art. And I did sociology, and then I missed it a lot, so I decided to keep going with it, and I discovered I really liked it.
Fascinating. Okay, because I've had moments like that. Carrie, Matt, Luke, have you ever had moments where you're like, okay, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to go do something else, and partway into it, you're like, this is stupid. I am not happy.
Yeah.
I had that in university.
Yeah.
I had the classic audition for the first show, not get in, think you're a horrible, horrible actor, and not audition for a single thing throughout your entire university career. So I highly advise not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I moved back to London, I realized that there was something missing, and it was, for me, it was theater. So I literally went through the phone book and found London Community Players, and that was my first foray back into theater, and now I can't get away from it, and I'm so glad that I did that.
Yeah.
So this is a perfect opportunity to ask Aaron, in times like that where you don't want to do it or you feel like you're falling away, how do you stay creative? How do you keep yourself motivated and keep that creative energy flowing? Because sometimes you can lose it, right? And you have to bring it back or refind it. So how do you do that?
That happens a lot. What I found actually helps, because I like painting landscapes so much, is I bring a camera with me everywhere I go. If I'm walking around London or something, and I take pictures of things that I like that I plan on painting eventually, and do that, and that really helps. And also finding shows
to go to
display it in.
Finding shows to motivate you to try to be in them.
Right.
As well as finding shows to go and be inspired by others.
Yes.
So would you say that your little photo diary is like the writer who's like, oh, I got an idea, and he just jots it down?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Isn't that neat? That's what Nick and Sean were talking about last time. Just write it down.
Yeah, exactly. They were talking about how a lot of their inspiration for their, like, they're trying to create a theater company where everything is originally written and stuff, and they're trying to keep that motivation going. They were talking about that. Same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So, do you think that, well, we ask this of a lot of people. You're at this point now. You have a showing, like, amazing. And I know, that was on Carrie's bucket list, and you managed that this summer. She's smiling and nodding. That's great for me.
Yes, I need to talk into the microphone. Yes.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the sound of a smile and a nod. Yeah, but, like that's something that's kind of on my bucket list. I don't actually... I don't really care if
you, you had your art entered in the Fraggle contest.
I did. I had my art entered in a contest. The world saw it. You know,
a few people picked it as people, one of their
people
favorites.
Voted for it, and that was totally awesome. Mostly it was awesome because, like you said, with, you know, taking pictures of things that inspired you, it made me do it. Like, I decided I'm doing this. I'm entering this deadline, which is, you know, Carrie again is smiling and nodding.
Yeah. You need something. You need to make it public. You need to give yourself a kick in the butt to get yourself motivated. And
usually I rely on Karis for those.
I like deadlines.
Luke, you're going to give everybody a bad impression of me, but you're already at this young age you're going to be in Starbucks, and you're at this gallery showing. Okay, so 5 years, what do you dream? What do you want? What would be the thing that would be awesome?
I'd like to be working in a gallery, I think.
Oh, really?
I'm studying arts management, so I'm learning about all that stuff. And I'd like to be just creating more work for people to see and sharing it with people. And
we did this studio tour in Huntsville this summer, like just at the end of the summer there, we did a studio tour, and it was really interesting to
see. We being you and Aaron.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, me
just
and
so
Aaron.
So the radio knows.
They are dating.
Yeah. We did a studio tour, and it was really interesting to see artists that are making a full-time living out of creating art and, like, yeah. you know, just the kind of, like, production that goes into it. Like, the people that are creating pottery and stuff, it's almost like a production line. Like, they have just these studios that are full of plates and stuff that they're just, like, dipping and creating and stuff. And I don't know. It was really interesting to see that kind of stuff. So, like, do you see yourself doing something like that in the future? Like, or
no.
more? No.
Smaller scale or?
Yeah. I don't think I could do it as, like, a 9-to-5 everyday job. It's okay. more of, like, a pleasure thing when mm-hmm. I feel like I need to do it.
So you don't want to turn it into, like you just don't want to be that pressure to produce. You're not a big
right.
fan of it? Okay.
I like it sometimes, but yeah. not. I think an all-the-time thing would be
It sounds
too
like
much.
You like art to de-stress and
yeah.
to spend the time with yourself.
Right.
Creating.
That's exactly it.
Instead of feeling pressured to do it, because then it kind of yeah. takes away the mm-hmm. you aspect of it, mm-hmm. and that's what some people really enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
and I wonder, I wonder about those people who can create massive amounts of work. They must get a different feeling from that. They must have a feeling of release of, I don't care how this one turns out because I'm going right. to make another one in 5 minutes.
Well, see, when I was, when, like, my view on it when we were up there is, like, the one guy, I believe his name was Eric Lindgren, he was doing pottery, and, like, all of his stuff was really good, but, like, there was massive amounts of it. Like, mm-hmm. and for me, it was, like, I could see that this plate and this plate and this plate were done in the same sitting. Like, it didn't feel as unique as, like, when we went to I forget her name, but she did collage on acrylic, and it was very very interesting artwork that I didn't feel like she did it for that reason at all. I felt like her work had like she liked certain subject matters, but I felt like her work was more like what Aaron would create, like a lifetime's mm-hmm. worth of, like, collection that she never really sold or something, like, and
right.
you know, like there was this different feeling about it that yep. I really liked.
You're kind of comparing, though, just to play devil's advocate, yeah. two different styles, one that okay. can be mass produced easily and one yeah. that takes a lot more time.
Yeah. Sure.
Especially true. If you're doing it individually. A lot of big name artists now have factories with people helping them and
yeah.
right.
whose hands
That's
actually
what I
paint.
Remember. That's what he had. He had, I think, yeah. two other people doing it.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
So I guess the question from that makes me think of for you, Aaron, is there something that specifically that you're trying to express, or is, like, do you have a raison d'être, or, you know, a mission statement in your work so far?
I haven't thought about it. mostly I just like expressing myself whenever the mood strikes me.
So what, think about maybe one of your favorite pieces. And what would that... Yeah, Carrie is smiling and,
like,
nodding and pointing at,
like,
me.
That's what I was going to ask.
So yeah. ask it. You ask
yeah,
it.
Yeah, if you had... I wanted to know if you had a favorite piece or one that's particularly meaningful to you.
I really like Monet. I think his studies of the haystacks were very fascinating, where he did different paintings throughout the day of the same haystack based on lighting and...
But what about your own work? Like,
oh, my own work.
Yeah.
My own favorite painting?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Is that what you were asking?
Both. I like both answers.
Yeah, both answers are good.
Because it's a good idea of who you are.
Yeah, it's always interesting to find yeah. out your inspirations, but also, like, what mm-hmm. you've done, too.
Okay. My favorite painting is this small landscape that I recently did this past summer. And I don't even remember painting it or anything.
Wow.
It just turned out really well, and I really like it. But
and it's on display at the Aeolian this month.
Oh, it is too.
Oh, another
and
plug.
So is it titled? Because some people just, like, write untitled. And
I did have it titled.
I forget what it was. It, oh, like, the title's...
Wilderness Ablaze. Oh. I think that was it. Because it kind of looks like the sky's on fire. It wasn't meant to look like that, but... It just kind of came out that way.
Well, sometimes the most beautiful things come out of the most unexpected places.
Right.
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have an accident in the middle of your creation. You're like, well, I have to go with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I taught you that, Karis, well, didn't I?
you rehammered it into my head. And so the listeners know, I was sketching one night at the Palace with Matt. We were managing the theater that night, and the house was in watching the show, and I was doing a sketch, and I decided to put marker to the paper. And everything else had been pencil and colored pencil up until that point. And I put marker to the paper, and I did one brushstroke of the marker, and I went, oh no, I've ruined it. And Matt was just like, no, go with it, finish it. I still don't think it's my favorite, but I'm really, really glad I finished it and didn't leave it unfinished, because that would have been worse.
And you learned. Yeah. You learned from it, too. Even though you don't like it, you learned how to work with it.
Well, it's that thing, right, of it's just paper, I can do it again.
I was going to say, yeah, you, if you make a mistake, you can just make another one.
Right.
That was always my biggest fear and problem when I was doing visual art in high school, was that I never wanted to ruin one, and I never wanted to redo it. Like, I wanted it to be perfect the first time, you know.
Right.
So I have a lot of half-finished stuff where I just lost interest because I made a mistake.
Because, yeah, I ruined it now, yeah.
So while we're talking about creating and doing, another perfect opportunity for a good question for you. What is more important to you when you're creating? Is it the execution of the piece, or is it more the subject matter?
I think the execution.
Execution, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And is there a way in which you like to work, or an environment you like to have working in?
I like to work at nighttime.
Yeah?
I'm not sure why, but...
I'm the same way.
Yeah.
Nighttime is when I'm most productive.
That's when I make my best puppets,
yeah,
too. Yeah.
Huh.
What about you, Carrie? Are you a nighttime person?
I'm definitely a night owl. I just don't like getting up early.
Yeah.
I
don't mind getting up early if I don't have to rush somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, I can get up. I mean, I have to get up early. But I try to limit the amount of activity I do in the morning, and then it builds up and it builds up and it builds up.
Yeah.
I find I create better with silence. See, this is the thing, too. I know a lot of people who like music or some
music.
Sort of background noise, and I can't deal with it. It distracts me too much.
Well, let's have votes. What about you, Erin?
I love music. I kind of need music to create.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Matt?
Yeah, I'm the same. I like to... Nighttime is when I'm more relaxed and I can work more, and I usually will have, like, Ravi Shankar playing or Steve Reich. Quiet. He'd have to be a little bit quieter than the Ravi Shankar, but yeah.
But something music. Instrumental. And
something instrumental. Nothing with either too many lyrics or lyrics at all, because I get really too focused on them, and I don't want them to interject into my work.
Well, you are a singer as well.
That's true.
Yeah. What about you, Luke?
Yeah, I use music to actually influence what I'm creating. Like, I'm a musician as well. Like, and so, like, I do web design and graphic design. I use it to. I will actually play music that is supposed to influence what I'm doing, like, especially when I'm doing like posters for the Drowsy Chaperone. I had the Drowsy Chaperone's soundtrack playing.
That
you
makes
know
sense.
What I mean? So, like, I use it to push me in the right direction.
Okay, that I can agree with, because I remember I was writing one of my shows, which is called Inspector Noble and the Figure in Black, and it was set in like the 1930s, the jazz era. So yeah, I listened to a lot of jazz music when I was doing that. But if I'm just kind of coming up with bare bones and stuff, I don't like to have distractions around.
Right.
If I'm hammering out a whole bunch of dialogue, or if I'm, you know, creating something, because I do a whole bunch of different stuff, crafty stuff, I need silence.
I think it. I'm with Carrie. It depends on what I'm working on.
Yeah.
If I'm reading a script, or, you know, if I'm planning blocking or something, it depends on the show. Like, for Gondoliers, I had to have the Gondoliers music playing because, well, I'm choreographing in my head while I'm doing it and stuff. But for other shows, just planning out rehearsals and stuff, I just like to have the TV on in the background.
Yeah.
Mostly because if I just have music going on in the background, I have no idea of the passage of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if a television and a sitcom has ended, I'm like, okay, I just spent a half an hour doing whatever it was I was doing. But I'm marking time with that.
I do that too, where like TV, like, I don't know. I think it's just that my ADD, like, I have to have some kind of external stimuli at the same time. Like, I can sit there and not pay a single ounce of attention to the TV, but it has to be on. Like, something has to be happening other than what I'm doing. I don't know.
And someone told me today that when you're watching television, your brain actually flatlines.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So
your brain is more active when you're sleeping.
You're not thinking about it.
Your brain is more active when you're sleeping.
Yeah.
When you're sleeping. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody listening to podcasts is better than watching television.
You mean flatlines as in like you're dead?
Well, no, as in no activity, as in no stimulus, as in no nothing's going on.
It. You're just watching it and it's feeding
Yeah, it's
you.
Just... You know,
oh,
wow. You know,
so, weird.
So ladies and gentlemen, listen to more podcasts. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Especially this one.
More. Yeah. Especially this one.
Have discussions with interesting people. Stimulate your brain. Stimulate brain.
Well, Carrie, you got the microphone now. So ask a question.
Your turn.
Oh, gosh. And here's where Carrie has her patented awkward silence.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. I have to ask Aaron a question.
In lieu of an awkward silence, I was going
to
say
it's
Aaron,
now patented. She has to do it at every show.
Every show. No, yeah. No. Yeah. I'm going to interject every time.
Yeah, but that's perfect. Okay. Perfect. Yeah. Yeah.
So what I was going to say was, Aaron, you never answered her original question. Was like she said, like she was asking about a favorite piece of work, and I think where she was going with it was what it made you feel like,
second half of that.
Exactly. Like what. What that work makes you feel when you look at it now and what it made you feel when you were painting it. Like, I know you said you barely remember it, but that's pretty interesting, you know? Like,
yeah.
So why is it your favorite? Like, what do you feel when you look at it now? Is it just because it's a beautiful piece of work or is it because, really?
I'm pretty proud of it.
Yeah.
I think just because it looks sort of like a painting that could have been from every artist that I admire a lot, which I found really interesting. And, okay, I do remember at one specific point I was very frustrated with it.
Cool.
But this was just when I was finishing the last touch of it the second day. And
How long did it take you?
I think I worked on it for 2-3 hours one day and then maybe an hour again the next day.
Wow.
I have a question about process. When you're planning a piece, or do you plan even? Do you start with like sketches, or you said you mentioned photographs? Mm-hmm. Do you go in with a plan, or do you just kind of go with the flow? Whatever comes out, or how does that work? I guess maybe depends on the piece.
It depends. If I'm doing abstract work, I don't really plan it. I just sort of go with whatever comes to my mind. But with landscapes, it depends on what it is. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll sort of trace it out a little bit, but it's usually just going with it, doing what I see.
So I'm going to throw in a weird question in here because we got to have at least one. And we're going to go back to this favorite piece that we keep discussing, which is on display at the Aeolian Hall.
Yeah. Yeah. Plug number three.
This favorite piece. If this favorite piece were something edible, what would it be and why?
Ooh. Something chocolate.
Something chocolate.
A Reese's cup.
Oh, maybe.
Would it be dark chocolate or milk chocolate? Or
milk chocolate.
Milk chocolate.
I love chocolate.
Okay. Something chocolate. And why? Just because you love chocolate?
Yeah.
And because you love this piece?
It's a comfort food.
So
that says a lot about what you think of the painting.
So the painting is comforting?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Do you have paintings that are the exact opposite for you, that are like jarring?
Yes.
Yes. And are those mostly abstract or like?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm leading you way too much. Say more about it.
Okay.
Yeah, so describe for us.
Okay.
That's what Luke is trying to get at. Yeah. Describe for us.
This is some good art therapy right here. Yeah. This is some amazing art therapy.
I use abstract more to express my feelings when I'm maybe not so happy. And I like doing landscapes when I'm in a better mood.
Oh, very cool.
That's such a great contrast.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Usually abstracts are like wild and crazy and they're not controlled. And
right.
Landscapes are more put together and and held up. So it's interesting to hear that when she's feeling one way, it's this kind of painting, and when the other, it's...
I would imagine that creating a landscape, especially if it's based off something that you photographed, you're like, okay, well... It was a bright day, so I'm going to paint it bright. I'm going to try to match it. Whereas abstract's like, whatever friggin' color I got beside me, I'm just going to do it.
Yeah. Just sort of throw it on there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, how big is the biggest piece you've ever created?
I did one that was, I think it was 4 feet by 5 feet.
That's amazing.
Good 20 square feet right there.
So if we get a canvas that size.
Can we top that?
or larger. Because Luke tells me that you are agreeable to taking our lovers, dreamers, and you background and sort of in jumping off as a jumping off point.
Re-envisioning it.
I can say that again?
Re-envisioning?
Good, because I can't say that right now. for us, how large can we make it?
How large a canvas can we buy?
Yeah, I guess.
You can buy like wall-sized canvases, I think.
Yeah. Done.
Yeah.
The problem is transport.
Yeah. Oh,
okay. I have a truck.
Hey, well, what? Done. How about a triptych?
Yeah.
How about three smaller ones?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or four? Yeah. Or four, because there's four of us on the team.
Perfect.
One for each person. Ooh. Do you like? Oh, she likes that idea.
And it's set.
Okay then.
So I have a question, it's been burning in my head. Now you're talking about Wilderness Ablaze being Wilderness Ablaze, right? Was the name?
Yeah.
You said the sky was kind of looks like it was on fire, but that was unintentional. So that reminds me a lot of the Romantic period of painting, the Romantic style.
Huh.
What would be your favorite style or period throughout art history and why?
I really like the Renaissance. I think just because, mostly Botticelli, because I like the way he sort of took the typical, what's her name? Mary, version of the woman, and sort of made her into something completely different. No one had ever painted a woman like that before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you like a lot of the high art then? Like,
yeah.
As it would be considered. Yeah. I like to consider all art as high art, but...
You haven't seen the stuff that I've made then.
I've seen some pretty weird things in my studies and my travels.
You're a pretty experimental kind of artist yourself, aren't you?
I am.
Yeah.
I'm really experimental, but...
Mm-hmm. So, okay. So jumping off that, because I know that Matt likes to push boundaries... Can you describe for us, or can you imagine a time and describe for us when you would like really push your own boundaries? Like when there might be a situation where you've already done that, or when you'd like to do that?
Oh, I already did something like that.
Yeah.
I just finished my BA this past year, but for my final drawing class, we had to do a series of drawings mm-hmm. for our final project, and I. It was kind of funny. The professor came around one day asking us what our topics were. And I completely forgot about it, hadn't thought of it. And it just came to my head that I was going to do something on phobias. So I did a bunch of abstract drawings on that, but I sort of drew from my own fears and my own experiences with stuff like that. And it was really challenging, and I thought I was losing my mind. But it was the first project where I really sort of lost my mind in it. Creating it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Just so involved in the whole process.
I was obsessed with it. I do it all the time and always thinking about it. It's cool.
Okay. Did you get an A?
I think I got like 80%. So nice. Pretty close to an A.
Yeah. Good.
Now, is there a kind of art that you find difficult that if you were to try to make yourself do that you would get really frustrated and maybe give up or?
Realistic art.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like architecture. I can't do really fine details like that. I think it would drive me nuts.
Mm.
So I don't think I can do that.
That is totally my husband.
Really?
Oh,
Brock?
Oh yeah. Fine details? Oh, my Lord. Oh, yeah. Graph paper, sharp, sharp, sharp pencils, and a ruler. That makes him very happy.
That's me, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of how I plan my stuff.
Really?
Being primarily a sculpture artist, if you look in my sketchbook, you'd think I was building a house. There are blueprints, there are measurements, it's very clean, it's very detailed, like all my measurements are in written in red, and everything else is in graphite and black graphite and
I have a pad of graph paper for when I'm designing websites so that I can like, and I will literally mark out the 1024 pixels. Like, well, back in the day I would. I'm sure it's different now. But, like, now I do it all on computer. But, mm-hmm. like, I have a book full of, like, websites you can, I designed.
You can see it in your head now still, the graph paper, right?
Well, and when you look at my websites, you can see it. Like, there's nothing that's 7 pixels. It's all 5 or 10 or, like, I don't know. I'm just crazy mm-hmm. like that, you know?
I'm incapable of stuff like that. I was thinking about this recently. I once had someone tell me, you know, anytime I think of the word scatterbrain, I just picture your face. Because you're
really,
you're so scatterbrained.
I don't know how I would take that.
I would decide to take that as a compliment.
Yes.
When you know Aaron,
especially
you know that's
on
a compliment.
Well, and on a show where we're talking about things that inspire us and we know that I'm inspired by Muppets, I think scatterbrained is a compliment.
Yes. Yeah,
that is true.
True.
It was when she came to she visited me. I was living in residence. And my room in residence was a disaster.
So she's a chaos Muppet.
I am.
There you go.
And as an artist, really, like, you never know when you have an idea. You have no clue where that came from. If you decide to just start painting something and you're not working with a plan and it just happens, you have no idea where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
I think as an artist, you're really not a one-track mind. I think you have to be a little bit all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Even if you do write it down on paper, very neat and
well, tidy. Exactly, because I'll do those plans, but then you can turn the page and I'm adjusting things, right? And then my final product as I'm building might be different because I discovered things as I worked with the physical objects.
Well, and see, like, I can interject a little bit because I've had the pleasure to actually watch Aaron do a few paintings, one or two. And, like, one of the ones that's on display at the Aeolian right now.
Plug number four.
He's so proud. It's fantastic.
Well, anyways, it was an abstract piece that she used, like, she's painter's tape to block off pieces while she was painting, like, stripes on and stuff. And it kept changing every time she would peel off the painter's tape. She'd turn to me like, should I use this color more? How should I black this, like, the edges on this? And, like, I got asked all these questions that I had no idea how to react to because I'm not a creator, you know? Like, and it was very interesting to be, I don't know, like, a witness to this kind of thing that was happening, you know? So, yeah.
Hey.
And Carrie's pointing at the painting
on
the computer
again,
here.
Good for radio, Carrie.
Again, I am such a visual person, which I need to learn how to translate this. Erin actually just pointed at the computer and was like, that's on my website. I was like, oh, perfect. So I could pull it up on her website.
Yeah. At erinhunt.ca.
Okay,
which
so
we will link to.
I'm going to ask Carrie then to describe for us Carrie's interpretation of said piece.
Yeah.
Your feelings and thoughts on this piece. Because if with Erin's permission, we will not only link to her website, but maybe we'll put this particular piece, because we're talking about it, on our blog, so people can find it easily.
Well, I'm looking at it, and there's just so many layers to it. Like, there's parts where it's beautiful gold and yellows, and on the other side, it's there's some blues, and then the whole thing has got interspersed with grays and whites. And to me, I'm seeing kind of, if I tilt my head a little bit, actually, it kind of, to me, resembles a sunset over an ocean with clouds on it, which I think is kind of cool. But I love the different layers to it, because it looks like two totally different paintings that have been kind of stuck together. I hope this makes sense. Almost like you're looking through like an iron grate at a different painting, which I think is so cool. It's like you're pulling away layers.
You have to wait till it shows up on the website. Like everybody else who's listening to our podcast.
Or you can come tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or tomorrow at 6 p.m.
All right. Tomorrow at 6 p.m. at
6:30 to 8:30.
At the Aeolian Hall?
Yeah.
Is that where it is?
London,
Ontario. You better put a link to their website. They're going to love us.
I think so.
When I was trying to pick paintings for the Aeolian, I was talking to Luke about this. This painting is like a very good visual interpretation of my train of thought. It's very scattered and layered, but it's kind of organized a little bit.
Yeah.
Kind of.
And there are pieces of it that don't use the painter's tape. That's what I like about it. Is the painter's tape separates a lot of pieces of this painting, but then when you're like, there's a splatter that goes over top of the whole thing that you really have to take the time to notice to realize that this You know, like it goes over the grate. Like this is in front, you know, like,
okay.
I don't know. There's a lot of layers to that painting. And I talked to a lot of people about it when we did the one showing, and it was very interesting to hear. I don't know. I find it very interesting to talk to people about paintings, especially abstract, because everyone feels something different when they see it.
Yeah. So my question for Aaron then is, now you have all this reaction to this one painting, how do you take in people's, you know, reactions to your work, and do you take it to heart, or do you just, you know, do you embrace the reactions, or do you not want to hear it, or does it affect you? There's like seven questions
It depends on the reaction. I've never really had any negative reactions from the public, but mostly just from teachers and stuff, and usually that's when I sort of take it into consideration and learn how to work around it or work to fix it. When I did my first showcase at Heaven Sent in Wortley Village, I was nervous. I was thinking, I don't know if I'm going to like sharing this with other people, because I've never done that before. But I found that I really liked getting other people's reactions and opinions and interpretations and taking from that.
That is one thing that's really scary, I think, about being an artist in any sense, is, you know, putting yourself out there and putting your work out there and being vulnerable. I know I felt that so many times, like when Karis mentioned that, you know, I had some pieces in a gallery in Wortley, and I'm going, oh my gosh, I've never done this before. I'm terrified. What if people think I suck? And the same thing with putting out a piece of writing or a piece of theater.
Right.
You're putting yourself out there. You're showing your work, and
it's not just showing your skill. It's showing who you are. Yeah. Because if you took the time to do it and spend that much time on it, that's who you are. That's who you're expressing and who you're showing to the world. And if people don't like that, it's a rough thing.
It can sure make you understand why people use pseudonyms.
Yeah.
Because they're, you know, they want to share it and they need to share it, but you know, there's that there's that need to protect as well. And in this day and age, we talked about this in our last podcast, where everything is so public and so out there, and everybody's got an opinion and has an opportunity to express an opinion. No matter what you do, the risk is just huge.
And I thought going into my final years of art school, being able to do whatever I wanted, especially in third year at Fanshawe, we were just given a studio space. We had no class, and we just had to pop out work and hold little mini exhibitions every 2 weeks.
Really?
And through those two semesters, I focused a lot on my family life, and my first body of work ended up being a group of kinetic autodestructive sculptures based on my experiences around my parents getting divorced. And so putting together my final show, standing in the middle of that gallery, looking around going, this is a few years of my life sitting right in front of me, and people have to come and walk around and tell me what they think of it. It was it was humbling, but it was a very, you know, I kind of stood outside myself for a second and got to reevaluate who I am. And it made me so much more comfortable, and I've had great responses, and I've also been told to stop what I'm doing and I should be ashamed of it.
Really?
But, you know, but I have the power to forge through that. Some people don't. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people drop out of art school because of that. But
Or theater school or whatever.
I'm one of the lucky ones who can say, no, I know what I'm doing. I'm not taking that personally, and move on with it. But
I think it could be a motivator too, because especially for me, if my name's attached to something, I want to make sure it doesn't suck. So I want to really put my heart and soul into it. And yes, I may get hurt, I may get burned, but at least I know myself that I gave 110% and this is my best work. And it's out there. You know, you can't control what other people think of it.
It's all subjective.
Exactly.
That's it. It's all one person to the next. It's just like music.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's going to like the same thing for the same reasons.
Mm-hmm. I think you have to have a really strong sense of self to go into something like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Any kind of artistic endeavor, no matter what it is.
Mm-hmm. You need to have a thick skin.
Yeah. I've had times, it's just been the past few years where I decided that art was really something I wanted to do for living in some form. And I've had people ask me, you know, what if it doesn't work out? And they would say, no, it will.
Yeah.
It will work. No is not an option.
Is not an option.
Did you go into it knowing that you had to have a thick skin and a strong backbone, or did you kind of learn through the negativity?
No. Well, I think, okay, with something like music, you sort of know going in that it's, people are going to tell you you suck and stuff. But with visual arts, I didn't know that until I learned about past artists and stuff like that.
Yeah. I think the no is not an option is a really common theme for people who have longevity, shall we say. Because there's loads of people who get discovered. Okay, I didn't do air quotes in the room, but I'm doing them now. Discovered. Those people, you know, they may have talent and they may last a while and things like that, but the people who really persevere and really go for it, and even if they don't ever, you know, are starring on Broadway or in, you know, Art Gallery of Ontario or whatever, they've just decided that this is what my career is going to be. My life is always going to have this in it. That those are people who have said, no, it's not an option. And you know, and here we all are.
Those are the people they write textbooks about. Like,
right. Yeah. Right.
That's,
you know,
my goal.
Yeah. and these are these people who have inspired all five of us here in this room, is that because they were just like, you know, okay, I'll take it back to Jim Henson. He was just like, what are you talking about? I'm going to work in TV. You know, he went and he went to the studio. He was 17. Can I have a job? 17, something like that. He was still in high school. Can I have a job in TV? No, we're not hiring right now. And he saw a sign on the wall saying looking for puppeteers. He went and got books out of the library, learned how to make puppets, and came back and said, okay, I'm a puppeteer. Will you give me a job? And they gave him a job. Like, no, it's not an option.
Exactly. And you look at people like Van Gogh. He only sold one or two paintings. And they were to his brother. And now, he didn't get to see the success that he brought to the art world.
Right.
But even though in this lifetime you may not get to witness it, what you leave, your legend that you leave behind is what, in essence, is more important.
Well, and Georges Seurat, like, no is not an option.
Exactly.
And Disney, no is not an option. Like. There's the list is long, and they aren't just in arts. They're in science. They're in exploration. They're in all those.
And you don't
kinds
make advances by saying no.
Yeah.
Or by giving up.
Exactly.
Wow, what a phenomenon! Do you like that? Do you like that segue? What an amazing! I hope everybody else out there gets that. What a phenomenon of all those people who don't say no, because as our listeners know, we like to wrap up our little interview with a song, which can be Muppety, but doesn't have to be. And I believe that we've convinced Aaron to join us in a little ditty. Am I correct, Aaron?
Yes.
Yes, and the song is called
Phenomena.
Excellent. So Phenomena. So we're going to thank, I'm going to thank my guest hosts and Luke for chiming in from behind the mic today. But really sincerely thank Aaron for joining us. And if you'll stick with us, gentle listeners, while we segue into our little song selection, please, if you haven't followed us on Twitter yet, please do so and visit our website. We want to hear from you. We want your suggestions and your feedback. And like us on Facebook. Thanks very much, and we'll see you next time on The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You.
Bye.
Sir, would you care to make a request?
I certainly would.
Oh, good.
Go away. Let me have my lunch.
Well, that is two requests, actually, but I will be glad to oblige. Go away, take a ride, take a walk. Do not stay, I have no time to talk. Yesterday I could pause for some fun, but today I must ask you to run. Go away, make it far, go away, take the car. Don't delay, please just scram, do not play where I am. Go away, make it far.
That's enough!
Phenomena.
Manamana. Manamana. Manamana.
Thanks for joining us at The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You. We'd love to hear from you, and you can do that at thelovers, thedreamersandyou.com or by finding us on Twitter or Facebook. This has been a Luke Bainbridge production. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, and we'll see you next time for another edition of The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You.
Life's like a movie, write your own ending. Keep believing, keep pretending. We've done just what we've set out to do. Thanks to the lovers, the dreamers, and